there's a huge shift that is happening. It would be naive even to say like, hey, it's just like tools that are going to empower us. Like this is very different. And I think what makes it very different is the speed of it. We still work in systems that move very slowly, you know, and adapt in a slow way. I don't know. For me, I see some time before like people adapt and companies adapt and teams adapt to using these tools the right way.
Welcome to The Creative Brief, and thank you for joining me for another conversation with the creative at the bleeding edge of the industry. Today, my guest is Pablo Stanley. Now, you may know him from his time at InVision, or Lyft, or Carbon Health, or maybe you know him from his comics, or his Figma plugins, or his music, or his YouTube channel. Honestly, this guy does so many things well, it's hard to keep up. So today, I've got him focused on his new creation. Pablo talks to me about Musho.ai. We'll talk about the future of creative careers, and we'll dive into the exciting potentials and pitfalls of AI as it looms large over the creative industry. It's a timely conversation, and I'm stoked you're here for it. I'm Brian Athey, and this is The Creative Brief. Pablo Stanley, I am so excited to have you here today. Welcome to The Creative Brief, and I personally am just, I'm so stoked for this conversation. I've been an admirer for a long time, and now I've got you here in the flesh to talk to. What's up, man? Yeah. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm excited to talk to you. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for creating a platform so other designers and creatives and other people go out there and just like talk about their stuff.
Get because on camera. Yeah.
We need people like you that create these this is spaces where let's stop working and stop being on the laptop doing stuff and being on meetings and being on calls and answering Slack threads, and let's just chat. Thank you for doing that.
Of course, man. It's my pleasure. And I am I try and bring it gives me energy to have these conversations, and so I very much appreciate the energy that you're bringing to the table. We talked about maybe grabbing one more cup of coffee before. So if you want to just dial it up, we can always get some espresso shots and see.
got enough caffeine for today. I think my body is ready. And the caffeine is just ready for us to start babbling about stuff.
Yeah, let's channel that a minute, because I know you. So here's sort of my roundabout. I was a big fan of InVision. Hate to see that they're not around anymore, but I'm pretty sure that I first discovered you with your work at InVision and that you were a lead designer there. I definitely got so curious when humans dropped into Figma, and I was so excited to play around with it, and I had to figure out where that was coming from. I found you there. I found a lot of your YouTube content where you were just this prolific content creator, sharing tips and tutorials and behind the scenes, and you know, you're this speaker and producer, and then you are also maybe the thing I'm the biggest fan of is you're also a comic book illustrator. But I realize in getting into this conversation that is like just the tip of the iceberg. Can you give me just kind of the lay of the land on maybe not everything that you've done, but some of the key steps that got you to this conversation, what you're focused on right now? What is your energy channeling into right now?
Man, working with, I'm being a cliche of, I suppose everybody's answering this right now and everyone that is in tech, but working with AI and using it for personal use, for my work use, but also being on the other side and creating tools with it. It's being, I think, the most interesting thing I've ever done, and that we as a team, I believe that the team is also just having a lot of fun and a lot of really weird challenges, working with it. So it's been fun working on that. But dude, I'm one of those people that just cannot be just doing one thing. So right now I'm also writing a new comic. And it's really fun, man. It's an adventure kind of thing. I wouldn't say it's a graphic novel because we're structuring it that way. Mm-hmm. But it's really just doodles and comics with this character. So I'm really I don't know, like excited to work on that. And also another thing, I think I graduated to VC level.
Okay.
How does that mean? I'm becoming an investor now. And I don't know, okay. I've been for the last 3 years on the side of, asking for money.
Right.
And then going with investors like, hey, how can I convince you to put your dollars on Doodles? So I have been on that side, but now I'm really thrilled that I'm part of a program so I can actually invest. And I want to focus on creatives, artists, people who are creating tools and solutions for other artists or for other creatives who are just like unlocking creativity. So I'm doing that, but I'm just starting and I have, don't tell anyone, I have no idea what I'm doing.
what is this that you mentioned to me before, this Dunning-Kruger thing? Tell me about this not knowing what you're doing, and that's like a competitive advantage almost.
I don't know. For me, it's like the whole idea of it. Dunning-Kruger effect. For those who don't know, like there's even a graphic, and you can Google it. But Dunning-Kruger effect is like from two researchers, Dunning and Kruger, that they started realizing that this phenomena that I suspect every human is a victim of, where in the beginning when we're starting something or we're starting to learn something or we just like heard about the news about a little thing, we feel very confident about that thing. And our level of confidence on knowing how much we think that we know about that thing is through the roof. Mm-hmm. The less we know, we just by looking at the tip of the iceberg, just by looking at the surface, we feel like we understand it. You know, we feel very confident, but it's really we're on the spectrum of how much we know. We're in the ignorant level, you know,
right,
and that's
sure.
where we feel the more confident that we know it all. You know,
the less you know, the more confident you can be. Okay.
Yeah, the less you know, the more confident you are. And it's almost like, was it Aristotle or whoever said that, hey, the more I know something, the more I know that I less know, you know? But you get to a point where you feel very confident and then suddenly that drops. Your confidence levels just drops through the floor, like, and because you start realizing that, oh, this is more complicated than I thought, or oh, there's more than I wasn't realizing, you know, because I was just looking at the surface. Suddenly you get to see that there's an iceberg below. So and that's where you feel the less confident, and they call it, once you are in the top of your confidence level, they call it the peak of Mount Stupid.
The peak of Mount Stupid. The peak of Mount Stupid. That's right.
And then you go to all the way to the bottom, and that's the Valley of Despair. And I think that's what it's called.
I like it up on top of Mount Stupid, yeah.
And I think that whenever you're creating something or you're starting a new venture, it's actually good. The Dunning-Kruger effect can be a good thing. Why? Because with that ignorance, it gives you that, I don't know, that you feel brave and you feel like you can conquer it all, you know?
Yeah.
And others that actually know that you're being naive, you know, and that you're being ignorant, you're being foolish, maybe even.
Yeah.
But you really, I think that you need that confidence, right, to go and start an adventure, because if you were to know that that the journey is going to be really hard, then you might not do it. You might not take those steps because you will feel like, dude, no, I don't want to get into that trouble. I don't want to get into those problems. So then you take a step back. It's like, no, never. But if you don't know about those hardships that are coming going to come in later in the journey, then you feel like you can do it all, you know? And I think you need that bravery whenever you're starting something. And I would say that I blame the Dunning-Kruger effect that has gotten me in a lot of things that you think that you know it, but then you suddenly realize.
It takes a little bit of blissful ignorance to be a founder. It takes a little bit of blissful ignorance to start a YouTube channel. It takes a little bit of blissful to go into, venture like you were talking about. I mean, what I have found at least is that, you know, a lot of people have what they call imposter syndrome. Even more people have this reluctancy to try new things. They get nervous, or they talk themselves out of it, intimidated, apprehensive, whatever you want to call it. But in my experience, I work a lot with founders. I also work a lot with, you know, quote unquote executives on the C level. I work a lot with lawmakers and politicians. This whole spectrum of people, they're the same people that you went to school with. They're the same. They're just normal people too. Like, there's not some level of high transcendent knowledge that most people achieve. Almost everybody remains the same B, C, and D students that you knew from high school. So even the people that you think are the experts are often just the ones that were confident enough to give it a try and kind of fake it till they make it, and not be intimidated by one challenge at a time. When you're looking at that whole mountain, or I guess the whole valley of despair, it's really intimidating. But when you just think about, hey, I'll just buy this domain and I'll have a company in a couple of weeks. Like, sometimes it's just that easy.
Yeah. And I mean, it is, a lot of people just like stay in that zone, right? In that zone where you think that you know it all, but you never really take more steps until you realize that, no, you don't know anything. I guess you need a little bit of that ignorance and that foolishness that gives you that confidence to keep taking those steps. And gives you that bravery to try new things. And I don't know, like the Dunning-Kruger effect, like, usually gets a bad rap, right? Because it mostly is just because it's actually fun to see the people who are making a fool of themselves, you know? On the other side is like, oh, you're being a stupid, you know? And maybe you've had a manager that who has like they are at that position and then in the hierarchy, but they really don't know. And you know that they don't know, but they feel really confident that they know it at all. And it's fun to make fun of them, you know? But it's, I don't know. I think that foolishness, we need it too sometimes, because like real fools like that persist, because even once you know and you are down in the valley, you have to be really
confident,
brave, and foolish to continue going when you are seeing how bad it is and how less you know. And you have to continue making those steps. So you don't want to neither stay in the side of being very confident but actually being stupid, neither also in the one that is like you lost all your confidence and now. But you because you understand it more. You don't want to be in it. You want to keep going, and it takes a lot of, I don't know, being very
perseverance.
Brave
to perseverance. Going. You got to just you've got to keep re-upping that confidence. You've got to keep, like, it's the hardest thing to try something, especially something that you're really excited about, and watch it not meet your expectations. Or even, you know, you might decide, check it out. We just went, is that the new Vision Pro?
this is the new, yeah, I can see you here.
am I in 3D now?
Yeah, for those who are not seeing it, I don't know if this podcast is also like just audio, but I just put some sunglasses from the future.
Yeah, it does look like you've just gotten out of a time machine.
Yes.
Well, okay, so time machine then. Let's talk to me about the future then. So you're working on AI. How did you get into it?
Man, well, it was a little bit of that, you know, like I suppose it's FOMO. It's always FOMO that also like drives you to doing something. But in the beginning, I mean, we have been dabbling with AI for a long time and ML. And a lot of the stuff that we call AI is really machine learning.
Machine learning, which has been around for a long time. Yeah. We're just seeing sort of like the new hyped up iteration of it in the last like year or two, but it's that all that hype has brought all this interest, and all this interest has brought all this activity, and all this activity is just breakthrough after breakthrough every day.
Yeah, man. And it's so weird because like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, like I would start like doing stuff, and I wanted to train my own model on my own doodles. You know, I was training a model on like I created like thousands of different iterations of my illustrations, and I would feed it to a model, and a model that like had been trained on drawings, and then it will just like do this what do you call them, the ones that are regenerative, competitive, anyway,
like NFT stuff.
Like no. Like, man, I just forgot. Anyway, you feed into a model, and then it just tries to recreate your illustrations, the ones that you're feeding it into.
Okay.
And dude, the results were terrible. They were really bad. And right. I was like, oh, it's trying. It's mm-hmm. cool. Like it will be just it will look like my illustrations, but all like, oh, you know, all like they were just attacked by the thing. So I don't know. Like I was like, okay, one day maybe it will get there, you know? And mm-hmm. I would just like stop, you know, it would just be more curiosity that would get me in there. But then suddenly, man, like you see the transformation from Midjourney 1 to now Midjourney 6, and it's outrageous. Like incredible. You mm-hmm. see the ones from Midjourney 1, and yeah, mm-hmm. like we were all laughing. It's like, oh, this AI thing is never gonna accomplish what we humans can do. We humans are creative. Right. Creativity is the thing that we artists get that makes us humans. And then we realize, like lately, that, oh, crap. No, actually, the robots, that's what they're best at being creative, at creating images, at creating copy, at creating songs, at creating music. Mm-hmm. Dude, it's like, I thought we were unique because we were creative. What happened?
isn't that the wildest thing that like, so all the predictions were that, you know, AI is gonna change transportation, and it's gonna affect blue collar workers, and it's gonna replace truck drivers. But what AI came for first was like design and copywriting and creative, right? Like you don't see truck drivers union striking. You see, Screen Actors Guild striking, you know, like there's this unexpected shift that AI is coming for kind of the white collar and artistic jobs instead of the more blue collar work. And I feel like that's such, nobody could have predicted that, I don't think, except maybe for you.
I was on the other side. I was like, my ego as a human was really high, you know, mm-hmm. like, because I was trying to train this robot to make doodles like mine, and my doodles are really simple, and it wouldn't be able to do it. And I was like, oh, you silly robot.
Yeah.
You're not capable as me, as a human who is creative and can do these very good illustrations. And then I realized like, oh no, like it just needed more training. It just needed more time.
Yeah.
That's
it's going from the original Pixar art to, you know, Toy Story 1 to Toy Story 4. You know, you go from barely seeing any resolution to seeing, you know, like the pores on the skin and stuff, you know?
Yeah. But what you're saying is really true, you know, like a lot of jobs, like, and it was so out of nowhere, you know?
So
like,
out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, the tools that, I mean, people who were using OpenAI and using their Playground, we were already seeing that with GPT 3.5 or GPT just 3, because on the Playground you could already see all the responses that it will give you, but it wasn't accessible. Like you had to be a developer and you had to be using the Playground. It was just like not something that people would use. But once ChatGPT came, it's like suddenly like, oh wait, this thing can do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. This thing, like a lot of automation, a lot of things that like are white collar jobs, you know, that mm-hmm. that involve just a predictable, like, I don't know, aspects of customer service, or like things that are routines that mm-hmm. just like, hey, you go and just do these things that are like rule based tasks. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that like AI could do. Also, just suddenly AI is able to help you on things that you're not an expert on, like for legal advice and for the
accounting,
things about
medical advice.
I mean, dude, medical advice. Yeah. Did I tell you that like ChatGPT saved my life?
No, tell me how. ChatGPT,
well, it diagnosed something that doctors couldn't diagnose on me. And I, well, basically, too long didn't read. I had a brain virus. But, and I had a, so I had a huge headache, dude, like the worst in my life. Mm-hmm. And I also had a fever, but that was it. Mm-hmm. I didn't have stomach cramps. I didn't have anything else in my body. Everything was okay. Mm-hmm. But huge headache and horrible headache and just feeling, well, feverish. Mm-hmm. So, and you go to doctors and if they see a fever, it's like, okay, well, is it your stomach? Is it something here in your glands? The glands that are like, apparently we have a ton of different glands in the body. And they wouldn't find anything. And I was like, this is weird. Like, because if you have a fever, you have an infection, but they just couldn't see it because they were the most common things. They were trying to diagnose me on the most common things. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't having a common thing. But then my girlfriend was like, okay, this is crazy because you've gone to five doctors and they all told you like, well, we don't know, but take some like this Advil for your headache. And it's mm-hmm. like, but you're having a fever and this is not okay. Right. So my girlfriend asked ChatGPT and ChatGPT right away, like made some questions and like follow-up questions like, hey, well, it looks like Pablo has encephalitis. I don't know how do you say it in English.
Encephalitis?
But it's encephalitis with something else.
Okay.
And so right there, my girlfriend was like, Pablo, we have to go to a neuroscientist, like someone, a brain doctor. And yeah, the brain doctor like diagnosed me too.
Look at that.
Yeah. It was like, oh, okay. No, you're having this thing and we need to get a lumbar puncture and just to make sure. And yes, it was positive, but like a common doc, I'm going to call them like other doctors, primary care doctors or other doctors that would just like checking me, they wouldn't think that I had a brain virus.
And what a miracle that you were able to use it. I mean, I think I use ChatGPT as a personal trainer. I've got a neighbor that is like a high powered accountant and he's, you know, it's working its way into a lot of his methodologies to streamline things.
Yeah.
But here on the design front, you've got Musho and you've got Lumi coming in. That's like generating some of the art for Musho to work off of. But what is it? What have you been building?
So Musho is it's a tool for creating design with AI. It's an AI first web-based design tool. Right now, what is available to the public is just the Figma plugin. But we're working on launching a web app that people can use also just to create designs. And we're starting with just like websites, like a landing page and like stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we're already starting to create like other graphic assets like that you might need.
Social media stuff I saw.
Exactly. Just to feed the beast, feed the algorithm that is always hungry, always wants more, always wants more images and carousels and videos. And now it's only videos the last 30 seconds or 1 minute. It's like this algorithm that is always there because you have to be present, you know? So
that's right. You gotta keep posting. Or we're not going to reward you.
Exactly. And dude, like I was reading, sorry that I'm going in a tangent, but I was just like reading about like all the different tactics that like some platforms use for if you're a business and you're just like trying to have this web presence, then they're pushing you as a business to promote your business, to put ads, you know? But once you put an ad, then they will not put you out there unless you put money. Like it's almost like, and you can keep creating content and the same content or the same quality, just being consistent. And now the right. platform will not put you out there unless you put money. It's a different thing.
No, you're exactly right. I do at my agency, we do advertising and marketing for sort of a whole spectrum of folks. And it is very easy to make the case that organic is dead. There's tremendous opportunity for organic on short form platforms like Shorts and like TikTok and like Instagram Reels. But you're exactly right. If these algorithms sort of recognize you as a business or that you're trying to sell something or promote something, your reach will be capped. And especially as you start letting that algorithm know that you're willing to spend some money to expand that reach, it will continue to exploit that behavior and make sure that your reach is either going down if you're not spending money or going up if you are. So you really have to be conscious of building content online, because if you want to do it organically, you really shouldn't talk about your product at all. Your product should be in the background. You should be selling stories, or maybe you've got an influencer, or maybe you've got a spokesman, or maybe you're just talking about relevant stuff. And you just so happen to be traveling with an away suitcase, or you just so happen to be drinking a Celsius energy drink. But like, you cannot be promoting that straight up in everybody's face, or the algorithms will say, Hey, that costs money. That costs money, man. That costs money.
You want people's attention? Give us your money.
Pay up.
It's you're right. Yeah. Organic. It's so weird to hear that organic is dead, and it's kind of true. But yeah, like on our side, we're building a tool that is like kind of related to that, that for us is, and it's not public what we're building right now. Like what is public is just the plugin, and this plugin can create social media stuff, can create landing pages, and can also create like we're feeding our own model for it to just like create any kind of UI. We have one model that we taught just on landing pages, just like this regular landing pages that is like for converting something, for selling a product, for talking about your, your band or your business or yourself. But then, designers usually want other stuff, not just like one landing page. Maybe you do it once, but then you have to do all the other things that come after you launch a landing page. So that's where we're working on. And it's been really fun, just like working with the little robots, because the little robots are a little bit rebellious, I would say.
How do you mean?
Which
that's
is
scary.
Not a very comforting thought.
Yeah, we don't want to think about the omnipresent superior technology starting to be rebellious, do we?
They're rebellious in that they're non-deterministic. You will ask them to do something, and they will listen, and they will try to do it, but it will always be different. That's one thing. So that's the side that is non-deterministic. Like however you ask it to do, like in on the side on the back end, even in the front end, when you are building with AI, usually developers and you're locked to something that follows rules, you know, and that you're going to get the output of whatever you create or you generate is predictable, and you know what you're going to get, because then you can program around it, and then you can like offer a service or offer a product. But when this thing doesn't follow the rules all the time and is not that deterministic, and the things that it creates are not that predictable, and then you have to build roadblocks around it, whereas like, hey, don't do that thing. You keep doing that thing that I asked you not to do. You have a bias towards trying to, whenever I ask you to do this thing, you want to do that thing, please don't do that. And sometimes you probably heard prompt engineering, but it's kind of a meme or a joke, but it's like, seriously, sometimes the prompt engineering is like asking it, can you please do it that way? Hey, can you repeating the same thing? Hey, but remember,
I told you that thing.
Yep.
That's how I talk to it.
It's so weird because like, it's, is like talking to a kid, you know, and a kid that is learning and is trying to, he's trying to do his best. That's the thing, is that when I say rebellious, I don't say rebellious in a way that is like, oh, I'm not going. It's trying to do it, but usually maybe not rebellious, but more like creative. Mm-hmm. And it's
unconfined.
Really creative, which is
unconfined.
Great.
It's just unconfined creativity. Like if you just told a kid to solve a problem, they're not going to live within the constraints of everything else that they've learned. They're just going to do their best.
So then what do you have to do? Like, hey, if you ask the kid, hey, like, hey, make a sandcastle, and then starts walking off to go dirt from somewhere else. Like, no. Use this sand that I'm just giving you. Like, don't go over there. And then it will be like, okay, I'll use the sand. But sometimes it will still go over there. So what do you have to do? You have to build a wall and say like, no, don't go over there.
There's a gate here.
You know?
It makes sense.
And it's like you have to corral it. So it just like it only uses the things that you're told it to do, telling it to do, which I don't know. It for me, it's weird and also I don't know. Fantastic. It's so weird because like it feels very natural, mm-hmm. but at the same time, since it's natural, then there's this randomness involved with it where it's not that side that is like unpredictable. And on our side, we're seeing that first you realize like, oh, that's a roadblocker because like a lot of things you have to build it around that thing and you have to teach it to not do certain things. But then there's also the side to accept that creativity, mm-hmm. accept that this is a living thing or that is using all of our language and all of our history to create new things. So it's like, hey, how can we potentialize that?
I'm really surprised to think about it like that because typical engineering, you're going to write your code out. And if you mess something up, you're going to return an error. You're going to have a problem. You're going to, the whole app's going to break. But what you're telling me is AI will actually avoid breaking things and just try and figure out ways around it. It's like it'll just move its tentacles somewhere else to solve the problem. So you can never, it's almost like working with a person more than it's like working with code or a machine.
Exactly. Yeah. It feels more natural. You're using natural language to tell this thing to do certain stuff. Mm-hmm. And when you're coding, you usually, you set structures in a way that it gives you a very predictable result. Mm-hmm. And here, it's like a person. You ask it to do something and you wish that it does it.
Well, how do you teach Mucho then to Mucho or Mucho?
Mucho.
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 M-U-S-H-O.
It means
Mucho. You got to check it out.
A lot. Abundance.
How do you – so I watched you do an intro video to it, and you just gave it a quick prompt. Like, I want a landing page for I think it was like a product or a service. I need a landing page for this, and then it just made you one. Like, full landing page. Yeah. Tried to make assumptions about your content and your photo selections and all the layout. Everything is responsive automatically.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to begin with building that out, but I would assume that, you know, just from my process, if I'm going to build a landing page, I have to have a lot of understanding of what it's supposed mm-hmm. to look like. I've got to tie content to imagery. I've got to sort of bridge creative gaps between how a user is going to read and then interpret what I'm saying to them. I've got to think about how they might explore all the different pages. How are you building a machine that can do that?
Yeah. So here's one way that we have is how we started and how we are evolving from that approach. Mm-hmm. How you start in a way that is going to give you good results, is going to give you good composition, layout. Well, you train it with things that you pre-make.
Okay.
So you make a ton of templates. You make a ton of templates on all the sections that this could use. Mm-hmm. And then you categorize them in a way that it can understand. And then you give it to it. Then it's like, hey, people are going to ask you for a landing page. Here are the it's almost like the Lego blocks that you can use.
Components.
You know, these are all the Lego blocks that you can use, and this is how you can manipulate these Lego blocks. Mm-hmm. So that is an approach that I see that others are doing too, and that is a approach that is like gives you good results, you know, mm-hmm. because you know that it, like a if it chooses the section that that has a heading with a photo and a grid, it's going to look good because you already gave it some rules for it to look good. Mm-hmm. So it's not making too many decisions on the layout and the composition. It's more making decisions on like what to use, what blocks to use, and then how to change those blocks. Okay. Like, I'm going to change the topography, I'm going to change the color, and I'm going to make it concise this way, and I'm going to put the blocks in a way that takes that tells a story. Right. And well, but now I'm telling you like exactly how it works. But it's not like you think of it like it's really allowing the robots to go through the design process themselves.
Okay.
Whenever you are going to design, let's talk about the landing page. Maybe you don't start right away wireframing stuff. You start with a simple text document, mm-hmm. you know, that is going to say like, hey, what is the story we're telling? What are the things that we're trying to do? And then you put it in a way that is, hey, tells the story in different parts, mm-hmm. you know? And having that, then from that, you break it apart and you give groups of sections of these things. This is the intro, this is the climax, and this is the conclusion, let's say. Right. So it starts doing those things. And then it applies design. So and the cool thing about this is we're realizing when I tell you about the design process is because on your side as a user, you're more like a client, mm-hmm. you know, and you're asking it like, hey, do this. And it's almost like working with an agency or working with a team where you have a manager of your account or the creative director of your account with whom you talk and you ask it like, hey, can you make it this way? Mm-hmm. And then they're going to be like, of course, let me do that. And then they go back there and they go back to the studio mm-hmm. and it's like, hey, I need a photographer. I need a copywriter and I need someone who is good with typography. Mm-hmm. Why? Because like the client is asking me to do this thing and I need those three abilities and those three people who have those abilities and work together to do this thing. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like doing that kind of stuff because when you're interacting with this thing is one single robot. And then the robot makes decision of what other robots to call. Like it goes back there to the team and says like, hey, well, we need to do this. And now I need the help from this. So it's more like a project manager, you know?
That's right.
It is.
When I was talking to Mark Hamian about it, he made this analogy that like AI is going to take design software to a place that it's like Microsoft Word, that it's tremendously accessible. And there are all these things that it can do, but for 99% of the functions that most people need, it's just going to solve the problem and you're not going to need, there are not going to be all these barriers to entry. Is a product like this made for design teams or is it made for agencies or is it made for creative directors, small businesses? Like who is your kind of target when you build a product like this?
Exactly. So like who are we focusing on? And we started building the tool for the creative professionals, mm-hmm. let's call them. And these are, I mean, just even it's on Figma, number one. And then it's a plugin. So you have to know Figma and you have to know how to use a plugin. And you, I don't know, you have to have heard about it and maybe to hear about it. Maybe you are in those circles of people who talk about these things, about like UX products and design products. So you are really one of that very niche creative professionals who creates things for clients or for themselves. And that can be the freelancer, the designer in an agency or in a team or sometimes the team of the one designer, you know? So, but, we wanted to do it that way and focus on that target first because we want to learn what are the things that as a creative, as a professional, you might want. And now we're learning a lot, but we want to expand this tool to be for the people who we call the communicators. Right. The communicators, number one, creating a tool for the creative professional, it's so hard because the expectations are so high, man.
100%.
Like as a designer, you want the
very critical user base.
Yes, yeah. Yes, which is great. Mm-hmm. You want that first user base because it's going to push you to make a really great product. Mm-hmm. It's going to push you to not create a mediocre thing. The output that this does has to follow rules, has to have good typography, good color palettes, things that work, you know? So because these people expect the best. Once we have, we're getting okay results for the creative professionals, how can we expand this for communicators? Now, communicators, they just want it to look okay. Yeah. Right. But they're doing a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones who are just like we're saying about like feeding the algorithm, people who are in marketing, people who are solopreneurs, people who are like now being candid, a lot of people who have been laid off and were in tech jobs. And now they're in this position where they want to put themselves out there, you know? Right. So it's this individual who might not be a landing page designer or a social media designer, but they have a lot to tell and a lot to share. And these people could be looking for a new job. So they need a portfolio, they need a curriculum, but they can also be like, hey, suddenly realize that, hey, I have all this free time and I've been wanting to DJ for a long time. I've been wanting to do my singing. I want to be wanting to do all these creative things that I haven't been able to do. And I want to monetize them and I want to have create an audience for that. So like we're starting to build our models and our tool for that kind of user that is more, I don't know, they just want to put themselves out there and then connected to Gumroad, connected to Lemon Squeezy, connected to all these other platforms that allow them to have a passive income. So that's what we're building. I'm excited because it's going to be out there in a couple of months, but people can try right now Mucho. What it has that is like, it creates social media stuff, it creates presentations and it creates landing pages and all of that stuff. It's trained on what I will call corporate design, like a design that is like square, that is familiar, that is like similar to the Apples and to the Stripes, that has this grid of the content is placed in a way that is like easily readable, mm-hmm. right? The tool that we're building now, actually we want to go against that. Like, how can we build a tool that actually breaks all those rules? How can we build a tool? And like what I was telling you about the robots, that they're a little bit rebellious. Like, how can we actually use that rebellion? How can we allow these robots to be just like really creative? Yeah. We have been trying to just like put them in a mold and they want to break that mold. Dude, no, let them break
Why
that
not?
Mold.
Yeah.
Let them do creative, like just imagine a lot of stuff. So now we're getting results that are wacky as hell, man. Just like, but the things that I would have never designed because my mind is so square now and it's so trained on doing this design that like follows these rules of typography, sure. and just like contrast with that. I always end up creating black and white websites.
Right,
you know?
Right, right. You've got to force yourself to break a mold and the AI is already trying to do it. I love that.
And the AI is like, no, get out of there.
Yeah.
And obviously we're still like, it has to be so wild and allow this thing to get weird.
Yeah.
And I think that there's that need for people to be, I don't know how to call it, but like that hyper individualism and hyper customization where, and you might say, well, there's already other tools that allow you to build websites, but ours is AI first, is collaborative, and is just easy to use. And also, I don't know, like we are focusing on the non-corporate and on the personal design. So, like,
This is really fascinating because I think that there are kind of two perspectives here. And that's what I wanted to ask that question. You know, as AI is sort of this existential thing, I think all technologies, new technologies are disruptive. And you can look at the newspaper industry. Yeah. You can look at shopping malls. You can look at selling books on. I mean, there's so many things that technology, the way that we communicate and connect with each other, everything has sort of been challenged and disrupted by these waves of new technology that come in. This is one that is sort of most directly focused at it's really global, but if we just focus on our industry as designers and creatives, this is kind of the first time that what we do and specialize in is kind of challenged by technology and these outside forces.
Yeah.
And what it does, here's the upside, here's the exciting side, that anybody now has access to these powerful tools that can help take their idea beyond their barrier of entry and just get out there and do it. It's like, I want to launch a podcast or write a book or sell a course or teach yoga online, but I need that landing page and the content and I need the brand. And all of a sudden it's just at your fingertips. You're ready to go, right?
Yes.
And I also think for folks that are professionals, there's opportunity to like leverage these iterations and move faster and supply more and tell bigger and better stories and have greater market impact. But I also think that they're just these designers, and you can see a lot of them online right now that are like, they're just designers. All they want to do is design. Yeah. That's their specialty. They don't want to pitch. They don't want to strategize. They don't want to do market research. They want the brief delivered and they want to design. And I wonder what does the design industry look like when the technology gets so good that it can outpace those folks and it can sort of change the paradigms of what you might even come to an agency or an expert for? Like, what does that future industry look like? I feel like that's the big challenge that you've got to wrestle with occasionally.
Yeah, it's there's a huge shift that is happening, and it will be naive to ignore it and to say like, oh, it's just like a, it will be naive even to say like, it's just like tools that are going to empower us. Like this is very different. Very different. And I think what makes it very different is the speed of it. Mm-hmm. That like we still work in systems that move very slowly, you know, and adapt in a slow way. And this thing just came out of nowhere. So I think yes, these are tools that will like potentialize our skills and will allow us to do many, many things. But on the job market, on companies, for all of that, for all of this stuff, for them to adapt and to see this more as tools and not as replacers, there's going to be, I don't know, some time before there's an app, like people adapt and companies adapt and teams adapt to using these tools the right way. I'm a techno optimist. So I see this thing, it says making us stronger and making us better and just like allowing us to express ourselves better. But it would be also very naive to just like say, oh, everything is going to be all right. You know, no. We have to like be aware that this is happening and this is happening really quickly.
Yeah,
and we have to.
You can see just in this last year that, you know, there are a lot, especially in the tech industry, there are a lot of designers that are trying to figure out what their next move is going to be, either because of layoffs or because they're predicting what's coming. But like, what is your advice to folks that are not quick to embrace this change? Like people that are still saying like, I see a lot of memes online and it's like, you know, like AI is going to replace designers, or we're going to replace logo designers. And then it shows like the awful logos that AI generates. And it's like, but these are the logos that it makes. So we don't have anything to worry about. It's like, bro, don't tempt it. Like, don't dare it. Like it's coming. Like every time there's a new release on ChatGPT, or every time there's a new plugin or new great piece of software, it's like, oh, it's all coming. So like, it is this sort of inevitable thing that we're marching towards if we're not there already. And it will take a shift in mentality. What is that? How do you recommend folks think about it and embrace it to kind of get them to the next stage?
I think recognize the powers of this thing and recognize that this is how these things are can be a tool and not a replacement. But also, like, go back to the human side and the. I still believe that there are some unique aspects about us being human and our creativity, mm-hmm. and I believe that there's things that AI don't understand about the emotional depth and understanding that something needs, mm-hmm. and the sometimes it's the cultural depth and sensitivity that as a human you might have with a specific theme or specific subject. Those are things that I don't see AI still replacing. It's still trying to mimic and it will try to convey the message that you want it mm-hmm. to do. And it will do a good job, but you have to first give it that context, that cultural context, that emotional understanding that you as a human have. So, and then the AI becomes a tool for like expressing those things, but the AI does not understand those things. It's just a robot that is like trying to generate words, yeah. you know, and trying to think what are what words comes next and then read it all again and then understand like the context of the things that it's doing right now and then pair it with all the knowledge that it has, which you will say, well, that's intelligence, but there's something that is missing there and that's the emotional side and the cultural side. So I would say, A, you designers, we have that stuff. We still have that. Right. So, right. And seeing it as a tool, I think it... Whenever I see those memes that you were mentioning about like, oh, look at what the AI is doing, it's like, I don't know. I think they were fun like a couple of years ago, but not anymore. This is like, it feels very naive to still do those kinds of memes and not accept the reality. It's kind of a denial phase yeah. that we're going through, I guess.
It's dark room photographers criticizing digital photography. These are early stages and we will probably have less time to adapt, but there will be an adaptation period and yeah. pretending like it's not coming and pretending like you don't need to be making, I mean, really what I hear you're saying and what I've sort of surmised as I use a lot of these tools is like, I wasn't scared of Photoshop. I wasn't scared of Illustrator. I wasn't scared to learn Sketch. I wasn't scared to learn Figma. I wasn't scared to jump into Premiere. And it's just because those were yeah. the tools that I was conditioned to be comfortable with that set certain parameters that allowed jobs and industries and professions to be defined. These yeah. are the new tools. And if I was coming into it without exactly. those parameters, it's much less scary. And there's a whole lot more room to be optimistic and excited.
It's losing the fear. It's having that curiosity and seeing this as a... again, as a tool, not a replacement. And also, like I was telling you before about like sometimes this thing does things that I would never design. Right. Like that allows me to expand those horizons that I have and those barriers and that box that I have created in my own biases and in my own way that I design, you know? And suddenly this AI comes and you give it an idea and it creates things that I would have never imagined. And then that's a great starting point. Sometimes I'm like, oh, dude, of course. Why didn't I think of that? God damn it, robot. Thank you. So like it's you can really see this as a partner that is going to expand those ideas that you have. And you have to adapt. You have to be flexible. You have to be curious. But also, like, I don't know. Like there's still the side of us humans that these tools cannot do. And that can be the human-centric part of design, mm-hmm. the ethical aspects, understanding what are the actual user needs. Those things AI cannot do. Can predict if you tell it, mm-hmm. and it will just like try to do its best to gather the average responses to that. But it is you as a human who will actually sense those things and can discover those things. So I don't know. I encourage a mindset of curiosity and but also not being more realistic that this is a thing that we cannot just like laugh about. Yeah. Let's laugh about it while we're learning it and we're like developing our skills. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like there are some things that it makes really weird results, but there's really smart people working on making those weird results be better. Right. And this thing is just like learning itself. It's just like making, right. No, that little error that it makes today is going to be gone in a couple of months. Yeah.
Pablo, I think that that's a perfect sentiment, perfect note to end it on. I just wanted to say thank you for the time. And I really appreciate you. Like this conversation is one that like I wasn't really sure as we got into AI how we'd like get through those subjects. And your sort of perspective, you time traveled on me again. for those not watching, Pablo looks like Doc Brown from the future. He looks like he just got out of the DeLorean and he's ready to go back to 1985. Yeah.
I'm coming from the future and telling you everything's gonna be all right.
How can they?
Okay, the robots are not going to kill us, and they're gonna be our friends, and they're going to allow us to enjoy our lives better. We're gonna have time for abundance.
Thank goodness.
This is me being a techno optimist coming from the future, and hopefully that's
tech
true.
Optimist Pablo Stanley. How can everybody find you online? We need your thought leadership. We need to be able to follow you. Where can we find you?
Pablo Stanley and Mucho AI. Mucho with an S-H. Mucho.
M-U-S-H-O. Mucho. And yeah, Lumi, I'm already messing around with as well. I thought that was really cool. I loved Lumi.
Dude, Lumi. Yes. I haven't talked about that, but it's really just a basic, at least for now, it's really just a basic stock image library collection. But it's all made with AI.
They're
by
awesome.
Different artists.
Yeah, they're awesome.
And I think 60% of the images I made.
How do you have time, man? Like, what are you doing with your time? Like, how do you structure your day?
Pomodoro is the best. Pomodoro tactic where you take short breaks and you allow yourself to focus, but then have a little bit of play. I don't know. Yeah. It helps you. And then that play becomes... you allow that play to also become productive things. I don't know.
I really encourage you to follow Pablo Stanley like I've been doing for a long time, because we just had a whole conversation about just a handful of things that he's working on right now. But like, ladies and gentlemen, that is just a little bit. Like, Pablo is all over the place and it's all fantastic, from the illustrations and the doodles to the founder stuff and the venture stuff. We're going to talk about venture stuff next time. You got to come back. But for now, thank you so much. I do appreciate you.
Thank you so much. And if you have a venture or something that is on the creative side, send me a DM. Maybe we can support
you. Hit him up. Creative Venture VC, tech enthusiast, AI creator, Pablo Stanley. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Pablo, thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you so
much.
Bye,
everybody. Lots to unpack from that conversation with Pablo. I feel like we could have gone several more hours, and hopefully one day we will. But since our conversation, Pablo has launched yet another awesome looking venture. His exciting new course, Master Gorgeous UI Design, is available for pre-sale now at together.art/gorgeous. That's it for this installment of The Creative Brief. Be sure to subscribe wherever you're listening and check back every Monday for the latest episodes. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening. I'm Brian Athey, and I'll see you next time.